Hey, we're back. Welcome to episode 14 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. On today's show, we have Dave Inman. Dave Inman works for a company called ProGrowTech. They make light fixtures for growing cannabis, medical marijuana. I guess they can grow some other stuff with it, but Dave's an expert on cannabis. He has his own show called State of Cannabis. It's a podcast on the Cannabis Radio Network. It's a pretty hot topic. Dave came on the show to see how distributors can learn to participate in the basically what is a horticultural lighting boom that's going on right now. You can also meet Dave at the upcoming Nailed Innovation Convention. That's right, we have a convention every year. This year it's in Palm Springs, more specifically Rancho Mirage, California at the Westin Mission Hills, February 13th to 16th. Dave is going to be given a talk called Indoor Horticulture. Learn how to navigate this budding market. Ha, 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 Dave, the budding market. Okay, so he's talking about growing cannabis. He's talking about growing other things. I thought we had a great talk with him. We're trying to see how distributors can fit into that whole horticultural game. Guess what, folks? This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Sign Hero. Forget about Keystone. It's brought to you by their Sign Hero 360-degree LED tube replacements. HO, that's right. Available for all size sign cabinets. Can you believe it? Keystone just went out and made all the T12HO and all the T8HO lamps in LED with 360-degree illumination so that the sign is evenly lit. Great for new and retrofit applications. How does it work? You disconnect that ballast. You run the line voltage right into the existing sockets, and you put the new lamps in. Oh, baby. I love these things. What market is left that's so untouched like signs? I mean, I've done a few signs, but I've always been saying, gosh, wouldn't it be great if we could just slam an LED tube right into those sockets? Keystone's got them. Go to KeystoneTech.com. That's KeystoneTech.com. For more information, Keystone is a manufacturer of LED lighting equipment that sells through distribution. They got all sorts of other great stuff on their website, so go to KeystoneTech.com, folks. Come to the Nail Convention. Meet the guys from Keystone. Either way, I won't take any more of your time. Episode 14 of the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Dave.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Say hi to Greg Eric.
Greg, how you doing?
Good, Dave. How are you?
It's almost Friday.
Good. So, Dave, horticultural lighting. Is that just about growing marijuana?
Well, you know, if it was, then we wouldn't have any food either. Horticulture lighting is going to be indicative of not only, new cannabis legislation that's come across several states, as well as Canada, but it's also going to be, you know, climate change and needing to be able to do this. I mean, one of the greatest travesties right now is how far we carry food from point A to point B when we can grow it locally. And the easier we're able to do that and the more cost effectively we're able to do that, the better for all of us.
Do you have any numbers with respect to how much of horticultural lighting is cannabis related and how much is non-cannabis related?
You know, I don't have any specific differentiators aside from, you know, the potential populace, being a roughly 10% would be typical consumers. And in certain markets, they would have the ability to home grow. But some numbers that I do have, and these are a couple of years old, is that currently the entire U.S. energy grid, cannabis cultivation now represents 1% of that. And that's a couple of years old. So it's very possible that that's increased significantly, especially with the new legislation with regards to cannabis legalization in California.
Okay, hang on one second. You said what year was this data from?
That was just a couple of years back, so 2015.
So you're saying that 2015, you had what, 5 or 10 states that had legalized recreational use of cannabis, right? Something like that.
And at that point, several medical as well.
Okay. And at that point already, growing cannabis represented 1% of every kilowatt hour used in the United States?
That is correct.
That's astronomical to me. That's a huge number.
Well, you know, when it comes to cannabis, one of the things, and obviously being a proponent myself, I'm a big fan of it. But it was always supposed to be something that was beneficial, you know, and you know, you could use hemp for remediation and all these types of things. But what we're really finding out is that cannabis, at least the way that we're currently doing it, is very labor intensive and very energy intensive. You know, you figure that you're typically using approximately 1,000 watt high pressure sodium per 4-foot by 4-foot growth plane. So not only are you using all that energy right in that small dense area, but then you're also replacing your lamps regularly, you know, and you know, 1,000 watt high pressure sodium has several milligrams of mercury. I mean, I believe it's 30 to 40 ish. So, I mean, it's a substantial, cost, not only to the energy grid, but also to, you know, just recycling.
What percentage of the cannabis growth industry is high pressure sodium in your, if you know, or if you're what in your gut, and what percentage is LED right now?
So currently it has been the modality for not only just cannabis, but all types of you know, indoor horticulture, just because it had the highest lumen content, and also the reddest spectrum, which really tends to help the stretch of a plant, you know, the phototropism of a plant. So the percentage is very, very high. Minimum of 90, probably closer to 95% is still high pressure sodium. There's a lot of rumor that there's going to be mandates that LED be the preferred method of plant horticulture. But nothing is in stone on that yet.
But isn't there problems with growth strains and actually creating it would actually make a different strain if you used a different kind of lighting? And how would they overcome those problems?
Well, the strain is always going to be based on the genetics of the plant, the phenotype of the plant. The results will vary wildly based off of the spectrums that are used at what time of day for the plant. So one of the things that we kind of have to figure out or kind of have to take into consideration is that, you know, we're trying to mimic the sun, right? So the sun, as it passes over the horizon, changes color, right? So very warm to very white, bluish to back to very warm. And, you know, plants don't have like photoganglion receptors. They don't see light like we do. They have phytochromes that basically absorb light. And once filled with a certain spectrum, they change shape and then absorb another color of light. And what this does every time you get a shift in this phytochrome is it signals the plant to change, you know, maybe add additional roots, strengthen their stalk, send off a new leaf, or maybe start the flowering process. So, you know, I mean, just changing the spectrum wouldn't necessarily change the type of plant, but it would certainly benefit the plant's growth.
Where are we at with the science of this? Like, is there any documents that you know that say tomatoes should be grown like this and celery should be grown like that? And do you have anything like that?
You know, there's several studies that are out there that basically will say this is effective for X. But, you know, the truth is that there needs to be a lot more testing done. And the testing cycle on LED horticulture is very, very long. You know, you have the whole plant growth process. So, I mean, you could be 3 to 6 months, sometimes 3-4 years for a plant to develop to a point where it's able to, you know, properly give enough information. But what we are seeing is that, you know, being lighting people, we understand, you know, light is light is light. As long as you have all of the colors of light contained within, you know, then you start to become, you know, more relevant to what the sun would normally produce, right? So we have our entire PAR or visual spectrum, you know, it's still 400 to 700 nanometers. So it's all still components of the same light that we use. It just, you know, needs to see certain accent points throughout the day, much like our circadian rhythm.
Right. Now, going to the importance of LED horticulture lighting, is it energy efficient focused or is it for increasing yield? What's the main purpose?
So there's definitely two different modalities with this. So, you know, again, going back to cannabis uses the highest light output possible because they want to increase yields, energy be damned. But if we're looking at leafy greens, things like that, it is more energy focused. And, you know, so you can get away with a much, you know, a lower output fixture. So for typical cannabis production, you know, if you're using 1,000 watt high pressure sodium, you would use somewhere in the neighborhood of a 500 to 700 watt fixture to replace that.
And if you had a choice and the energy did not matter, would the high pressure sodium perform better than the LED?
You know, for our results, at least with the company that I'm with, ProGrowTech, we've seen across the board increases in not only yield, but in terpene profiles, potency, as well as a static decrease in energy consumption. It's a variable spectrum in intensity, so we're able to dim based off of what should be happening to that plant at the time. So we're able to further reduce consumption over a greater period of time. But also, you know, we also think of heat, right? And in Arizona, where I'm at, you know, heat is a constant battle that we face. And so every time we add a watt of power into a space, it's 3.142 BTU hours. And so anytime that we're able to reduce that, that's just further reduction that we're able to enjoy.
Now, what is it about high pressure sodium that it makes it a good source to grow?
It shoots out a lot of light.
Yeah, I was going to say lumens per watt. I was going to say lumens per watt. Yeah.
That would be the correct term, yes. you know, anyone that's that has to go through LS1, you know, they should definitely know it, right?
Yeah.
Now, is brighter light mean more growth necessarily? More lumens equals more growth?
So there are some studies that there's a diminishing return on the amount of light, and essentially it's 140 or 1400 PAR is, and this is a study that came out of University of Mississippi, and it was very relevant to cannabis. That being said, this was prior to CO2 ever being introduced for plant growth and various growth enhancements that have happened over the amount of time that study came out. So it's not necessarily 100% controlled study. So, but that is the one that I know of that exists is a 1400 PAR.
That's the name of the report, or that's the amount of light.
That's the amount of light.
So what's the PAR stand for? Excuse me, I'm not an LC like Gregor, but
you know what? Photoact.
I don't.
Okay, go ahead.
Photosynthetic active radiation, and it's a fun term that really just simply represents our visual spectrum. It's 400 to 700 nanometers.
And you're saying that you can improve yields or make it more efficient by having tunable lighting on lighting controls as well?
Absolutely. So, you know, again, during different seasons, we're going to have different colors that arrive, different intensities that arrive, and plants are very cyclical, you know, just like our moon phases and all those things. You know, plants like the repetitiveness of what their species would know. That being said, you know, when we look at all sorts of different types of plants, there's all sorts of different types of land races where they'll arrive at different points of the equator, or they'll be in the mountains of wherever, you know, so they're all going to have different light that arrives to them, and being able to tailor light based on what they should be getting is a very empowering thing.
Now, can you generalize a color temperature as a grow light, like in terms of lighting we sell every day?
You know, the product that we have is basically a three channel. We're obviously adding more and more, but what we have is a 2700K, 65K, and 660 NM. So we accent the red, but we're also able to get a lot of our, you know, 450 nanometer out of the 6500K because it's a very blue spectrum. But we want to maintain a full spectrum the entire time. So we want to just accent during certain phases. You know, so that way, if we need to have a plant remain more dormant, you know, so say you're growing poinsettias, you want to grow them to a certain height, keep them at a stasis until it's almost Christmas time, and then you flower them and you ship them off. So, I mean, that's one of the things that
you can artificially create flowering on these plants if you technically set it up properly.
Well, it's not even necessarily artificially. So plants go through different things. You can have a plant that's an autoflower that would just automatically flower. And then you would have other plants that have to change their daylighting interval. So they would go from, say, 12 hours a day to 10 hours a day or 8 hours a day. And when that happens, the plant will photomorphogize, or, you know, photomorphogenesis, basically. And
that's when it shifts from... Where can people get information on this? Like when different plants
You know, you would... Basically, any plant that a person is wanting to grow, there'll be plenty of online information to kind of give them a kickstart into various species. But every type of plant basically has different variations of this. You'll have tomatoes that are autoflower, some that require that daylighting interval to shift before they'll toss out a flower. You know, just like orchids, they are temperature dependent, and so they'll tend to flower more when they have a dramatic temperature shift.
So I would say that there's a lot of subject matter expertise based on the plant that's out there based on experience.
100%, yes. And a lot of times we need to be able to develop based around those needs. And, you know, one of the things, you know, when we look at, you know, electric lighting in general, one of the things that we've always had to do is build around the electric light, right? So like the first thing that came out after the incandescent bulb was the lampshade, right? And one of the things that we're able to do that's different now with LED is rather than direct, we're able to place and paint light very specifically and with purpose.
Can too much light on a plant have a negative effect?
100%, yes. So one of the things that can happen is a term called photo bleaching. And essentially it's so much light that it destroys the chlorophyll and a leaf will turn from green to white. And then it no longer can photosynthesize, which is the light energy shifting into chemical energy to feed the plant.
Okay.
Wow. That's a lot of information we just got through right there. I'm gonna get into some horticultural lighting. How do you find your customers? How do you find out where these people are?
Well, you know, I'm in a unique scenario myself. You know, our CEO of ProGrowTech happens to be my son-in-law, who also happened to be the campaign manager and author of Prop 203, which was Arizona's marijuana law. My wife is, you know, a longtime activist. And so I kind of just fell into having access to a lot of people and being able to show them this technology. And being a lighting background to begin with, it was not something that they were really privy to. So I had to educate people that, you know, LED can do everything that a high pressure sodium or metal halide or T5, these are the different light sources that would typically be used in a growth environment.
I've seen a lot of T12 VHOs too. Used in the growth.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
There's these growth chambers where at universities in Ontario, where they have a chamber and it's got, they have to have like either Sylvania or GE T12 VHO, and they're having a hard time finding those now.
Well, that's because they're not really making them anymore. And, you know, I mean, you know, as well as I do that, you know, the brand doesn't necessarily mean much, you know, because those guys make those lamps for everyone else too. Yeah. So, I mean, really when you find them, you find them, but I mean, VHOs have really, they've lost favor quite a bit over the years, but at the same note, LED can do the same thing. And that's been the overarching comment that,
you know, we're now 100% confident with that.
100% confident. Absolutely. And the fun question is, why wouldn't it? You know, I mean, light is light. You know, a photon is a photon. As long as you have all of the photons that need to be there, you're good to go.
Hey, Dave, this is the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, and we found out that light isn't always light, actually. That there's been some flicker issues. You know, would flicker cause problems with growing plants? I mean, you know, there's no flicker there's a lot less flicker with fluorescent or HPS than there would be with LED.
Well, With fluorescent, you know, you're going to definitely still have striation. I mean, it's still based on, you know, a 60 hertz cycle. You know, I mean, once upon a time, fluorescent lamps you couldn't use in a machine shop because they would oscillate at the same frequency as a machine, and it would look like the machine isn't moving. Your machinist would reach his hand in there and lose all his digits because it really was moving. So, I mean, flicker is still present in just about every light source, whether we can perceive it or not. That being said, a plant needs a certain amount of time to cool down, you know, right? So like before it realizes there's no more light and it starts shifting to the next stage. So with that being said, a simple flicker, I doubt would have much impact. Although there is an inversion to that though. There is a thing called the Emerson effect. And the Emerson effect, what it is at the end of a light cycle, the light is shifted to red and pulsed for a certain amount of time to make it think that it has more light than it actually does. Now, this is something that's being experimented on. So it's you know, there's not a huge amount of quality data. It's just new data. So, you know, we'll keep our eyes out on what kind of effects that does. And if it really has benefit, we'll certainly add the ability to our fixture layout.
Now, when you're proposing a new LED system to a grower, how do you calculate a payback? Is it only energy efficiency, or do you also look at yield and tell them you're going to grow X amount more, which equals this much business?
Yeah, that's a great question.
You know, we do have calculators that will show, you know, what an increase to yield would look like. That being said, I've never found it a good idea to guarantee results. It's always better to just simply guarantee what your output is. You know, basically we're a paintbrush to a painter. And it's up to that painter to paint the picture that they need to. We are certainly there and available for questions and guidance to maximize their yields and their you know, use of the product, because their success is certainly our success. But it would be one of those things that I wouldn't ever say you'll get, you know, 10% more across the board every single time. I will say that it's been my experience that the tests that we've done in controlled environments and have historical data, several yields of data that we have seen increases, but these are the things that we did to get there as well. So it's not always just going to be changing.
I'm comfortable, but as a lighting guy, I don't know if I'm comfortable telling an experienced indoor farmer that he's going to have more yield.
Exactly. So, that's one of the cruxes right there, is because you don't want to necessarily say that, you know, but what you do say is that I can create the same amount of light and better light than what you had before. But it is still up to them to learn how to paint that picture, because they are going to change things.
Would you
know, their HVAC load is...
Would you suggest a farm do it incrementally? Sorry to interrupt you, but I mean,
absolutely.
Like, let's do it in sections here and do like a section.
What we generally do is we will do a trial. So we'll do maybe 6 or 12 fixtures at a facility, and we will be there on site to for the startup, showing how to use the fixtures, and then we'll be available, you know, through the entire process. And then once they've harvested and they can actually do a comparison from their HPS or whatever their current model is, sometimes people use metal halide as well, but they can test their yields to their historical data. And that I've found to be the best, you know, like the old adage, you know, the proof is in the pudding, right? And actually having an educated customer with the product is by far the best solution.
What's the name of your company? Oh, sorry, go ahead. You go ahead, Greg.
So what kind of paybacks do you see typically in a project? I know it depends on the hours and the wattage you have and what you put in, but on average, what do you see?
You know, it's going to vary wildly depending on how you calculate it. And just like any other payback, you know, sometimes you'll put in your maintenance and repair avoided costs. Sometimes you won't. Sometimes you'll bank it just purely on energy. But I mean, you know, it's all incremental. So, you know, I mean, if you're saving, you know, 30% right off the bat, even if you had the fixture full tilt, so you're at about 705 watts versus 1100 watts from high pressure sodium, including the ballast draw. And, you know, so you have about a 30% reduction right out of the gate, depending on where you're at, Puerto Rico or California or Washington State or Arizona. All those are going to have a different kilowatt hour cost. But it again, it's a linear thing. So the less you use, the more you retain.
Are you the fixtures, are you involved with the farmers directly? Or are you selling through distribution?
So we are currently, we definitely sell through distribution. We do get involved in the sale because it is a difficult sale. You know, it is not one that typical lighting people understand. You know, they don't know how to interpret certain variables yet. And this is one of the things that I'm very passionate about, that lighting people need to get into this market because it is huge. And it is only going to get bigger and bigger. But the problem is that we always think in terms of how our eyes are going to receive light as opposed to how a plant is going to utilize the light. And using the appropriate terms that you would, you know, diving back into, you know, sixth grade biology class, you know. And that's one of the things that we really need to do again is I don't want to say reinvent ourselves, but certainly open ourselves up to the fact that there is another market that we are missing out on most of the time.
How do you handle how do you handle the lumen maintenance issue?
So, you know, the lumen maintenance is all based on how hard you're going to drive the light source, right? So, you know, if I have a diode that's, you know, I'm pumping out, you know, 1.5 amps through, it's not going to last that long. What we do is we use a lot of discrete diodes and we drive them at 350 milliamps. So, you know, rather than, so in a fixture like this, in an environment like this, you want something that you just hang and forget it, right? Like it does what it needs to do. You whack it with a ladder, it's fine. You know, you want it to be an industrial grade product. It's a wet environment. You know, you got people moving around, you got, you know, all sorts of different things that could happen. And so, you know, lumen maintenance has to be a factor in that. And again, to dive back into it, we minimally drive our diodes and we use a lot of them.
Do these fixtures that you supply, do they have replaceable components that don't have to come from you?
So it's a modular system for the most part. It's a bar system on a frame. So we can replace bars, we can place drivers, we can replace frame items, but they would still come from us. But you know, they have a 5-year warranty. So, you know, chances are if there was a failure of any kind, we would just replace it out of our stock.
What's the average payback on a project on in energy savings alone?
You know, I do very little in the payback cycle myself anymore. I do a lot more with the design and development of the product. But you know, the one crux is some markets are going to have a rebate to offset, some will not. Most often what I see is financed projects because it is more expensive than using your traditional high pressure sodium. So it's generally these growers or, you know, VC companies that say, you know what, we want to make sure that when we build a facility, it's rock solid. I don't have to do a bunch of maintenance on it. I know I'm using the least amount of energy. And then, you know, if I choose to go vertical, I have the space to be able to do that. And that's the other facet that, you know, we probably should touch on is that, typically in a cultivation facility, your ground is your growth space and all the rest of the height of the building is put to waste. With this platform, it is designed to be integrated into a vertical system. So if you had 25-foot ceilings, you'd be able to have, you know, 3 to 4 additional growth spaces, depending on how high or how long you would veg your plants for, because that's also, you know, again, part of the painter's palette. Some will have very short plants, some will have very tall plants. It all depends on how long they want to have the plants grow for before they flower them.
When do you, so have you seen a payback under 5 years, I guess, of the paybacks you've seen?
Absolutely. No, the paybacks generally, and again, it all depends on what factors you plug in. You know, I mean, I can make a payback in 6 months if I get to plug in enough variables. You know, there's not this much dust over here.
Yeah, I don't lie to anybody. I mean, I come up with pretty straightforward paybacks based on what it actually is going to be for them. So being
exactly
here, let's assume that we're being legit and we're not, you know, selling people a load of garbage. Like legitimately, what's the payback normally?
So that's not necessarily something that we sell it off of is based on a payback. So that's kind of what I'm trying to explain. It's not, you know, just simply a reduction in consumption. It's a change and a shift in how things are done. So if I'm using high pressure sodium and I have a 20,000 square foot facility, I have 20,000 square feet I can grow. If I am using LED and it's a 20,000 square foot facility with 30 feet, well, now all of a sudden I have an exponential increase to my size. And there's power limitations across the board. I mean, if you go out to central Washington, you're going to start running into power issues where you're just not able to get enough. And what is your choice at that point but to reduce your consumption? And so, you know, again, like historically, you know, in lighting especially, you know, what we wind up focusing on is a simple ROI. And in this case, it isn't based simply on a simple ROI. It's a shift in modality. Now there
I don't know if the typical nailed distributor can go into a growing place and say, hey, now we're going to jump in here. We got these new fixtures and the replaceable components only come from one source. And you need to change the way you grow this product in order to achieve a payback. I want Greg to feel this. Are you with me on this, Greg? Do you know what path I'm walking down here?
Yeah, it's a whole shift in, you know, the mentality, the way we've sold lighting for years is on payback and energy savings. And this is getting into, you know, the other field that I think lighting in general might start going towards. And that's what they talk about, lighting and health and other benefits of lighting. And this sounds like it kind of, you know, falls in that category. So I agree. I think it's tough for us to just jump in and get into. But Dave, when do you see this taking place, a mass adoption of the LED technology and growth?
Well, I mean, we see the adoption rate on LED just in our commercial industrial space accelerated way past what CFLs were. And I would be completely flabbergasted if LED horticulture didn't have the same type of increase over legacy technology. When we also look at, you know, like places like California, the fifth largest economy in the world, they are looking to force people to use only LED for these cultivation facilities. Now that is, again, it has not happened yet, but that is something that is in the works to happen because, you know, again, it uses so much energy.
Is there a shortage of energy in California?
Well, Arizona sells a lot of energy to California, Palo Verde power plant. But, so we were talking about the U.S., 1% of the U.S. Energy grid is cannabis cultivation. It is rumored to be as many as two digits in California. So between 9 and 11% is California is utilizing for cannabis cultivation. But it also is the first state.
A lot of stoned people in California. Hey, holy mackerel.
Dave, well, you're not wrong.
This is a good time for you to plug that podcast of yours that you were talking about. Go ahead, Dave.
You know, I do also have a podcast. It's on Cannabis Radio. It's called The State of Cannabis. I have had that going on for a couple of years now and have had some wonderful guests. We had Charlotte Green, the news reporter in Alaska that quit so unceremoniously, if any of you remember that. But, Robert Plashthorn, who was the black tuna, was a special on, I believe, Showtime or HBO, but he spent the most amount of time in prison for a nonviolent offense in U.S. history. So interesting stuff, again, a lot of it is wrapped around, social activism and, social justice, trying to reform the way we handle things. And then just wrapping that all back into,
where can people find this podcast? Give them a website.
So you can go to Cannabis Radio. You can go to cannabisradio.com. You can also download it on iTunes, iHeart, Spreaker, Stitcher. You can follow the show on Google Plus. Obviously Facebook, Twitter, the normal social media platforms.
I think the Get a Grip on Money podcast is going to steal your producer.
I got an awesome producer. I got to tell you, Brasco, if you do hear this, you are awesome. He's out of Boca Raton, Florida, has a couple of podcasts himself that he does, but he is just stellar. But he also came from terrestrial radio too. So he kind of knew how this all came together to begin with and helped guide me as I learned as well.
Well, I think we could do a whole podcast on cannabis. I could do not even related to lighting. I feel like I'd love to talk to you about it, but this is a lighting show. Greg, do you want to finish up with any thoughts?
It was just said, Dave, you're going to be at the Nail convention coming up too. And that's,
I will be. Yeah. I'll be speaking there. Yeah. So hopefully everybody comes and listens,
Well, this is the official podcast of Nailed, right? So, all you listeners out there, Weston Mission Hills, I think it's February 13th to 16th. I should have that written down somewhere. It is.
That's right. Yeah.
Mission Hills in Rancho Mirage, California, February 13th to 16th. Dave Inman will be there and he'll be answering questions and talking. So call the Nailed office. But other than that, Dave, I think we just nailed a nice little 35-minute podcast there. How do you feel?
I feel great. How do you feel?
I'm great. We got another one coming up right after this. So, hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys. You have a wonderful day, okay?
See you in a couple weeks, man.
See you. Sounds good. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Keystone Technologies and their Sign Hero LED sign tube replacements, basically. Available for all sign cabinets, man. Keystone made them. That's right. Keystone made them. I'm so excited about this product. They got them in all the sizes. You just disconnect the ballast and you slam those Keystone lamps into the sockets and your sign is retrofitted. Oh, baby. 360-degree illumination so the sign is completely covered from top to bottom, nice and bright. And what application is left out there? What's left? Signs are almost virtually untouched. Keystone's got the best retrofit I've seen. I'm not kidding you. And I've been in this game forever. And, I just love this product. I'd like to thank Dave Inman from ProGrow Tech for coming on the show. And he's got a podcast on the Cannabis Radio Network. So cannabisradio.com. It's called State of Cannabis. And you can meet him at the upcoming Nailed Convention. That's NAILD.org, Nailed.org. The name of the convention is Nailed Innovation. And we're in Palm Springs, more specifically Rancho Mirage, the Weston Mission Hills in Rancho Mirage, February 13th to 16th, ladies and gentlemen. So come on out to that show, go to nailed.org to find out more about the convention, and I hope to see you there. Bye for now.